Well, good morning. Name is Brandon Ziske, the lead pastor here at Austin Oaks Church. If you're a guest with us, we're thrilled that you're here. We want to let you know that we love Jesus. We want to be a church that's simply all about Him. We want to center our whole lives around Him. And if there's anything we can do to help you take your next step closer to Him, let us know. And one of the things that we do kind of now every Sunday is what we call the Growth Track. And this morning at 12:30, we're going to be launching Step 1. And so if you want to know more about our church, our mission and vision, kind of the things that we love and we're passionate about, I want to encourage you to come check that out, 12:30. In the room right behind this wall. We would love to have you. Not only that, since it's the it's the first Sunday of the month, is something that we are now going to be continually to do from here on out, is the Dollar Club. So we hope you brought $1 with you, and this is above and beyond your offering. But what we're going to do is we're going to collectively, as a church, contribute a dollar, and we're going to take all of that money, and we're going to find a family in need. It could be like diapers, it could be like, you know, car seat, gas, whatever it is. You know, we've helped people who couldn't afford for medical bills in the past at our former church, things like that. And we're going to use that, and we're going to bless a local family that is in need of just some tangible love. And so there's going to be two boxes, one outside of those doors and one outside of those doors. Please put your dollar in those boxes. Otherwise, if you put it in the offering plate, it will get consumed with the general offering. So please do that. I forgot to tell the first service that. And so the ushers are like, man, the offering was huge this morning. It was like, it was a bunch of singles, you know? It's just like, yeah, all right. But I want to encourage you to do that. Okay. We are going to be continuing in 1 Peter. We're in a great series. We're just going to walk through this letter all the way up to Easter. And we've called this series Distinct because those who believe in Jesus are marked by hope. And what we've discovered so far is that Peter's writing to churches in Asia Minor, just like the churches today, that we're going to be living in a culture that's going to become increasingly more and more intolerant to what we believe and to the message that we have. And so Peter wrote this letter to encourage their hearts, to keep them rooted in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so all of chapter 1, we've been seeing that Peter is just constantly reminding them of who they are. Here's your identity. You are called out. You are adopted. And not only that, you are in exile here. You're a temporary resident. This is not your home. So don't try to make this place your home. You have a different home. We have a city that will never, ever perish. It's forever and is never going to disappoint. So that's where it is. He's setting us up to make sure that we can live and stand firm in this true grace of God. And so he's been telling them that and encouraging them. And now in chapter 2, we're going to see this dynamic shift from Peter. He's going to start talking about certain behaviors and how we should be living in such a culture. Like, how do we live when the culture becomes hostile around us? Like, what do we do with the governing authorities that we don't agree with, that aren't holding biblical values? What do we do with them, right? We're going to see some really strong teachings, and it's going to be really hard, but it's important for us to understand because it is the way of Jesus. And this is one of the reasons why I love that we did communion already, because if we're centering around Jesus, we are saying we identify with him. We gladly receive the gospel, which then ought to then mean we're going to live a certain way. We're going to reflect the gospel a certain way. Our values are going to be different. And if you were with us last week, Chad did a masterful job of laying out 1 Peter, the second half of chapter 1, of driving home this point that we are to set our hope fully on Jesus. Not one foot over here and one foot over here, but all on him. Because now we know, we have tasted and seen that the Lord is good. We understand that there is nothing good in this world that will truly satisfy our desires except for Jesus Christ. Now I want to let you know, this morning's passage isn't going to be one of those passages where you're going to walk out of here going, I'm going to conquer the world. It's not one of those. It's one of those parental type of conversations where maybe you would have with one of your kids, or maybe you had a lot with your authority figure. It's like you come and like one of the things we do with our kids is like, okay, you got to stop this. You can't do this. But then we try to come in and remind them of who they are. We know this is not you. You are not a liar. You're not this kid. We love you. You're forgiven, but you got to stop it. Right? Like, so that's kind of the idea of 2 Peter or 1 Peter chapter 2, because he's going to give us three verses that deal with a behavior. And then there's going to be a middle section of verses that, again, remind us of our identity and our purpose, and then he's going to come back to behavior. And this is all a setup for our actions and our ethics and how we live in a culture that is becoming increasingly more and more hostile to what we believe. So I'm going to start out by reading 1 Peter chapter 2, the first three verses. So put away all malice and all deceit and hypocrisy and envy and all slander. That sounds like a fun start. Like newborn infants, long for pure spiritual milk that by it you may grow up into salvation, if indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good. And this is the idea that I want to talk to you about this morning, that you may grow up. That word oxano in the Greek is a strong word. Peter is looking to the church and saying, it's time to grow up. Now, this is really embarrassing. And guys, I'm not making a statement on you, and I don't know why I'm picking on guys on this, because I know girls play video games too, but guys, they seem to play video games a lot more. There was a season in my life where I realized I needed to grow up. I was obsessed with video games. Like when I was a little kid, like I see it right now, I can see wives and their husbands and kids. Like, yes, yes, yes. You're all like, I relate, okay? Like when I was in middle school and even in high school, like I didn't even think twice about it. I would spend many, many, many hours playing like Mario Brothers and Mario Kart and the Link and Zelda, right? Like on, the Nintendo, Sega Genesis, all that kind of stuff. And I didn't even think about it. It didn't even hit me that it was a bad thing until I got into college, right? When you think about college, you're basically paying for an education. So basically, you're saying it's like my role or my identity in college in these 4 to 6 years is to be a professional student so that I can advance my life, so that I can have, an advancement in my career and all that kind of stuff. So your identity really as college students is academic, but however, we also have other ideas and co-curricular activities that we like to be involved in college. And so rather than owning that responsibility of my collegiate identity, I wasted so many hours playing video games, and I didn't even realize it was a problem until my senior year in college when I had that senior capstone project that was a big deal, that would make or break your degree if you're going to graduate and all that kind of stuff, because, lo and behold, you're going to graduate, you're going to walk into the real world. No, instead, I decided to get up every morning instead of doing the research and doing the work, and I would play Major League Baseball on the Sega or a Nintendo 64. I would do my own career, my own roster. I'd build my own guy up so that way I can continue to advance. My roommates would wake up after me. They would see me on the couch playing the video games. I have a box of cereal, a bowl, and a 1 gallon milk thing right there. And they would walk down. They would see me at 8 in the morning knowing I have class at 9. They would come back at 3 p.m. and they would see me in the same spot, in the same PJs with the same cereal and the same milk. They look at me and they go, you got a problem. And I'd be like, yeah, but I won the World Series. Right? Like I did this, like I wasted so many hours and time. Like I just wasn't willing to grow up. I was like, no, this was really fun. Now, when the straw broke the camel's back is when I realized when I got married, video games had a problem. Now, I didn't have a gaming console early on because I thought I would grow up and get rid of it. But I then would tell my wife, like, I miss video games. They were a good thing for me to veg out and clear my mind and all this kind of stuff. So now I'm a husband, and I was just starting my pastor with college students. So my identity is I should be a good husband and a good pastor. And my wife thought she'd be really sweet. And she didn't realize the addiction that was coming, bought me a PlayStation. And then next thing you know, instead of going to work and being responsible, she was still a college student. She would go to school and come back home, and I would be still playing PlayStation. Honey, why aren't the dishes done? Well, I had to finish the season. I had to get to that next experience level. And I realized, like, man, I had to grow up because my role was to be a good husband. My role was to be a good pastor. Now, church, listen, there are some times where we just need to hear the facts from Scripture and say, church, it's time to grow up. If Jesus is everything to you and you've received the gospel and you're freely receiving his broken body and his shed blood, like now, time to live like that. Embrace your identity and therefore embrace your purpose. Stop thinking it's about you. Stop wasting time. Embrace every opportunity for the sake of the gospel. We need to hear this. And this is one of those parental messages where you're like, stop doing this. Okay, stop doing this, but remember who you are. We love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. Now stop doing this. And that's what Peter is getting at. Because he ends up saying to him, he's like, listen, and here's going to be the point this morning. He's like, our identity defines our purpose. I want you to grab hold of this. This is not a deep thought, but it's so influential. Our identity defines our purpose. I was a college student. So my purpose as a college student means I need to make good of that $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 I spent and get a degree. If I'm a husband, that's my identity. I have a purpose. If I'm a pastor, I have an identity. Therefore, I have a purpose. As a son or daughter of Jesus Christ, you have an identity, and that identity has a purpose. And that means we have to stop doing certain things and start doing certain things. And he goes on. He just starts. He's like, listen. Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong verse. So put away all malice. Put it away. Put away all malice. This word malice is not an act. It's a desire. It's a thought. It's an inclination that happens on the inside. It's something that is premeditated. And the phrase put off is the image of, like, let's just say, taking away clothes that no longer fit and giving it away. How many of you in this room, if you were to go into your closets, have clothes in your closet that you know don't fit you, but you keep it in your closet because maybe someday it will? Anybody? Y'all liars. Like, we all have it. Like a good thing, before we moved here, my wife forced me to do that. I had clothes that, like, jeans I would fit in high school. I was like, I'm going to fit back into those things. And some of that ship has sailed years ago. Like, this is the idea. It's like, put away. Like, you got to get rid of it. Like, you got to hear, this is your responsibility. Like, I know sometimes we just want to be passive bystanders and go, well, the Lord will do it all. He's like, no, no, no. You have to choose to put away all malice. And this word malice really is a general term for putting away all evil. We hear this all the time in the New Testament, right? Put away the old, put on the new, put away the flesh, and put on the things of the Spirit. Like, this is our charge. Put away all malice. Because what we're going to discover is that if there's malice inside of us, if there's a desire there, it's going to prove to you and I that we have not set our hope fully on Jesus. Because look at the descriptions. Put away all malice, all deceit, and hypocrisy. Why do we deceive? Because inevitably we want something. We want to convince people of something that isn't true for our own benefit. It's either driven by pride or insecurity. And deceit is a byproduct of the deceiver, Satan. Hypocrisy, it's playing a part. It's pretending to be something that you're not. And some of us play really good. We play the part of really good of being really, you know, religious. We look really religious out here, but inside, are we just dead bones? Like, are we true? Are we, like, honest with other people? Because if we're deceiving or being hypocritical, again, we're doing something for our own gain, to get some sort of advantage, to get something that would satisfy my own desires. Put away envy and slander. Have you ever envied someone? They just got it. They're the smart one. They're the athletic one. They're the pretty one. They got this. They got that house. They got the promotion. What happens when you end up envying someone? Don't you start to slander them slightly? When you covet something, you start to think ill of that person. Like, and honestly, like, as believers, like, what should we even be envying anyways? Like, how many of you, you don't have to answer this out loud, you can just in your heart. How many of you coveted on your way in the church? House, car, this, that. It's like, no, put all of that away. This is not your world. This is not your home. You got to put these things away. In other words, church, you have to starve these desires. You have to starve it. Don't give it any room. Don't give it any air. Don't let it breathe in your life. Kill it. Snuff it out. Don't feed it. Put away all malice. Starve these old desires. We are to be distinct, set apart from God's living hope. We are to put our hope fully on Jesus. Starve these old desires. In James starts writing this. James is Jesus' half-brother. He gives us some more insight into this issue of malice and how dangerous it is to have these desires sitting in our hearts. He goes, therefore, put away all filthiness and rampant wickedness. He's like, just, you got to put these things away. And then you've got to have the responsibility. You've got to choose to put on, receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save you. Again, in chapter 3:14, but if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, gut check, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not wisdom that comes down from above. Now look at this, but it is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exists, there will be disorder and envy in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And again, in chapter 4, verse 12, you desire and do not have, so you murder. Well, I haven't murdered anyone. Jesus redefined that. In Matthew 5, he says, if you hate your brother or you hate your sister in your heart, you are guilty of murder. When you're envious of someone and what they have, you will naturally slander them. You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot attain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask for all and spend it on your passions. Put away all malice. Starve these old desires. Church, it's time for us to grow up and put these things off because it's not in congruence with who we are in Jesus. And that's why now Peter, he goes on to say, it's like, listen, like newborn infants, this is just a metaphor. It's like newborn infants, long for the pure spiritual milk that by it you may grow up into salvation. I underestimated greatly the cry of a newborn baby as a new dad. Like I had no idea how trying hearing that newborn baby would be. Like you're just like, I can't. Like especially as a dad, first kid, there's nothing that can prepare you. You're like, you feel so incredibly helpless. Like that newborn baby just has this instinctive desire to cry when it's hungry. I remember when Cora was born, our first child, and we would try to take shifts so we, you know, Krista could sleep sometimes and I would stay up and try to take the night shift. And there was one time, this happened more than once, but there was one time where Cora, she woke up and she was just screaming, you know, and I didn't want to bother Carissa because I didn't want to wake her up. And I tried everything humanly possible. I didn't have any milk left over. It was gone. So I tried to pacify. I tried to rock. I tried to this. I tried to sing. I tried to dance. Like there was nothing that I could do to appease her desire to be fed. Like newborn babies, crave the things of God. That ought to make us hit the pause button and go, what am I craving? How much do I crave the things of God? In light of all this video game stuff, this week I was convicted by studying this word. I had a video game on my phone. Pathetic, I know, right? It was there. And I realized that every spare moment I had, I would pop up that game just to get a little bit further in the game. And I realized, why don't I just take these moments and crave pure spiritual milk? Now, here's why I'm saying this. How many of you have ever tried to diet before? Food diet, right? For me, my diet was horrendous. You can just ask my wife. My diet still to this day is horrendous. When you start to eat bad food, you crave bad food. You don't realize that it's bad because it tastes good. You don't realize that it's bad for you. It's good by taste. Good food tastes bad, so therefore it's bad food. But the quality is good. Let's just get that straight, right? So when you start the diet, you start to eat the healthy food. We're not going to call it good. We're going to call it healthy food. You eat the healthy food, and next thing you know, your cravings change over time because you're putting away the junk food and you're starting to eat the good food. And then if you were to go back and let's just say have a Whataburger or McDonald's or whatever it is, you eat and you're like, oh, I feel sick. Like that's the concept here. It's like, put away this, but crave this. This is something we have to do. This is up to us. And the promise Jesus gave us is in Matthew 5, blessed are those who thirst and hunger after righteousness, for they will be filled. In other words, for they will be well fed. I will stuff them and I'll have more left over. We need to shift these desires. That is on us. And that's why Peter goes on to say, so by it you may grow up. He's saying this to a church that's facing hostility and a culture that is persecuting them. And obviously, they're starting to drift back into old desires that Peter had to come in and encourage. It's like, put these away, crave this. The pressure's going to come. You keep choosing this. We need to grow up in our salvation. Church, we need to stop. We need to stop wasting our time and realize that we need to embrace our identity, which has a defined purpose. He goes on to say, it's like, we'll get to that. You didn't see that. If indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good. If indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good. How many of you have tasted and seen the Lord's goodness? You ever have those moments where maybe you've drifted away or maybe you haven't been as close to God? You just feel in your heart like, I miss you, God. Like there's just something in your spirit that is just craving God, longing for God. That's because you are undone. You've tasted and seen, and you'll never have those desires satisfied if you're dabbling in the things of this world. My mom said to me all the time, Brandon, you are what you eat. You are what you eat. And so, like, this is a true story. I used to devour Pop-Tarts as a kid. Loved Pop-Tarts, put a stick of butter on that thing, and you're good to go. Like, and so, like, my mom would be like, Brandon, if all you eat are Pop-Tarts, you can turn into a Pop-Tart, is what she told me. So I got a little imaginative, and I was like, so if I am what I eat, then this must be what I look like. Because this is my diet. Listen. The same principle holds spiritually. I cannot tell you how many times when I counsel people, they're sort of surprised by the behaviors that are coming out of them. People who struggle with sexual issues, pornography, lusting, whatever it is, I start to ask them, what are you putting in? Like, what are you eating? Because the reality is spiritually, you are what you eat. Jesus even said, what comes in will eventually come out. So you got to start asking a question. What movies are you watching? Oh, don't tell me to be that conservative. No, listen, believer, it's time to grow up. Yes, it matters. I just can't stop being greedy. I can't stop lusting. Like, okay, stop buying things on credit. Like, are you, like, you got to realize what are the things that you're allowing yourself in? Because I'm telling you, I do it myself. We justify these behaviors like no other. When the reality is, we're having one foot over here and one foot over here. And this is where Peter's going to come and say, no, it's time to grow up. Put these things away. Put these things away and crave the pure spiritual milk. Now, because Peter knows that's kind of a hard statement, he goes into verse 4 and he wants to remind them. He's like, listen, okay? Stop doing this, but you got to remember who you are. And so he gives this little section here just to remind them of their identity and their purpose. And he goes, as you come to him, as you come to Jesus, remember him. Remember who he was. He's a living stone. What a great image. I've never met a stone that's alive. It's a powerful image, immovable, but he's alive. He's a living stone, rejected by men. Don't be surprised that people aren't in agreement with you. If people in this world say, wow, you're old-fashioned, or you're lame, that you don't live this way and you don't act this way. It's like, no. Listen, like they've been rejected by men, but inside of God, he was chosen and precious. Here's what's awesome. Look at this. As you come to him, you yourselves, like living stones. This is your identity. He's a living stone. Peter's saying, you are like living stones because you are made alive in him. The old is gone, the new has come. You have, like, he's our plumb line and we are being built up. Look at this. Here's our identity. Now the purpose starts to come. You are being built up as a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. He's a living stone and we are like living stones. It's important for us to realize that we are chosen, we've been adopted, and we are precious in God's sight. Like we got to embrace this. This is who you are. Your identity defines your purpose, okay? And because of that, we are meant to grow. We're being built up into a spiritual house. This is the ecclesia. This is the church. Church is not four walls. This is not a church. This just happens to be the building that the church comes together. Like the church is you and I who believe. We are the living stones, and we are being built upon Jesus Christ to form this spiritual house where we're set apart as a holy priesthood. We are people who are set apart to serve on behalf of God and the people. Like that is our purpose. Grow up, embrace your purpose here on earth. You are a holy priesthood, serving on behalf of Jesus and the people, and you're offering spiritual sacrifices that are going to be acceptable to Jesus Christ. We are to be presenting offerings, sacrifices, rather than always being consumers and takers, like God, me, God, me, God, me. No, no, no. Our role in the world is to offer spiritual sacrifices. Well, what are these spiritual sacrifices? One, our growth. Here, I'm going to explain why I'm saying this. Our growth, our spiritual growth is a sacrifice because it's going to bless other people. We got to realize that the church is made up of living stones and we're all to participate as living holy priesthood. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, offer yourselves as a living sacrifice. If you are adopted, precious in God's sight, that's your identity. Here's your role. We are a holy priesthood offering sacrifices, and this is the greatest sacrifice we can give. Here I am. Putting your life on the altar. And that's why it makes sense when Peter says, put away all malice. Because you can't have one foot in this world and one foot with Jesus. You can't say, God, I love you with everything, but don't tell me to live pure. Don't tell me to stop having sex before marriage. Don't tell me to give up these. Old school right here. All right. You just can't do it. That's hypocrisy. It's playing a part. You got to set your hope fully on Jesus. Give yourself as a living sacrifice. We're supposed to present ourselves. But the second thing that we're also supposed to be given is in Hebrews 13, we see this. Can we move the next slide up too, please? Sorry. There we go. For we have no lasting city, but we seek the city that is to come. And then look at this. Let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God that is the fruit of the lips that acknowledge his name. Not only are we supposed to be offering ourselves as a living sacrifice, we are to be giving a sacrifice of praise continually to God, regardless of how you feel. Regardless of how you feel. Because if it's about how you feel, it's not about him, it's about you. And that's idolatry. Yeah, I don't like that song. Doesn't matter. Is he worthy still? Yes, he is. I don't like that. It doesn't matter. Our job as we live and breathe in this life, and it's not just on a Sunday morning, it starts tomorrow morning when you wake up and you've got to go to work. Our lives are meant to be this holy priesthood where we're giving ourselves, but we're also declaring his goodness all the time. You can't do that if you haven't put away malice. You can't do that if you're still hoping here. You can't do that if this place is still trying to be your home. You can't do that. He's trying to encourage you. He's like, this is who you are. You're chosen, you're precious, you're set apart, you're a holy priesthood. And then he continues. He's like, listen, not only that, you're a chosen nation. You're a royal priesthood, a holy people, chosen for his own, like what it says in, this is where you go, Brandon, just read the Bible, right? A holy nation, a people for his own possession in verse 9. And then you see this powerful purpose, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light. I want to read that again. Identity, purpose, chosen race, royal priesthood, holy nation, a people for his own possession, purpose, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Stop playing the video game. It's time to grow up. This we get so much joy and blessing when we embrace this. Our life struggle as a believer when we have one foot in and one foot out. That is a miserable way to follow Jesus. Anybody with me on that? It's miserable. But yet we do that so often. And that's why Peter ends in verse 11. This is the bookend to it. He says, beloved. Like, that's such a powerful, deep, like, beloved, dearly loved ones, I urge you. Like, like, parents, like, have you ever urged your kids to be good? Like, please, listen, no, you don't do that, please. Like, you can't do it. You're trying to say it to them. Like, Peter's saying, beloved, I urge you, as sojourners and exiles, this is not your home. This is a business trip. You're here temporarily, pack light. This is not your home. To abstain from the passions of the flesh, which war against your soul. These passions of the flesh, we automatically think this is just sexual. It's not. It's all sinful desires. And Peter gives us grace here. He's like, listen, it wages war against your soul. We understand that temptation. Paul says it, right? The flesh and the spirit are constantly at odds, waging war against each other. But because of Jesus, we have the power of the resurrection inside of us where we can choose life over death. Because we are temporary residents here, be good. Be good. Be distinct. You're marked by hope. Be good. Every single one around you, you're not alone. Every single one of us faces temptations. Every single one of us is waging that war against our flesh. I do not know a single one of us that is exempt from this. We all are. And that's why we need each other, to encourage one another. But he goes on and he continues to say, it's like, okay, verse 12, keep your conduct among the Gentiles or those outside of the church honorable, so that when they do speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. In other words, they're going to come against you. Don't be surprised. But still do good. Not eye for eye, not tooth for tooth. I mean, this is tough. Next week, you're going to hear an extremely tough passage. Peter is going to tell the church, submit to your authorities, your governing authorities, those in political power. Nero, study Nero for a moment. Nero was the emperor. If he got near you, he would burn you alive as a believer, just for fun. Peter's telling the church, submit to Nero. Do good. Be good. Do not change regardless of the persecution. Do not change regardless of the hostility. Do not change. Stay steadfast. Because here's the promise. They will see your good deeds. And they will praise your Father in heaven at some point. This is temporary. So here's what I want to end with. And this is just a setup for next week. Go after Jesus. I want to challenge you. Go after Jesus this week. I want to challenge you strongly. Make some substantial changes in your life. Instead of playing video games, guys, you know who I'm talking to. Instead of playing video games, instead of wasting all of those other hours like watching the news obsessively, because nobody does that. Instead of doing that, pray, get into the Word, get into community. Instead of craving all these other things and getting into Netflix and Google Prime and all the other Amazon Prime, Google Prime, like just like put all that away just for this week. Seriously, I want to challenge you. Do a detox from social media. Crave the spiritual things. I guarantee you next Sunday, there will be a significant change in your heart. I guarantee you. Go after Jesus. And then around you, always show them Jesus by how you live. Father, I pray that by your Spirit, you would take, if it's even just one thought, Lord, that you would take that thought and you would build it deep in our hearts. Lord, I know that this could be a message where it feels like we might be stepping on toes and getting in people's faces and things like that, but Lord, it's because your heart is good. You discipline those you love. You tell us that in your Word. You discipline those you love. You want the best for us, but also we need to be reminded that there are people all around us who are still dead in their sin. We live in this world that is lost. Lord, thank you that you've given us the privilege and the opportunity to declare the excellencies of the one who brought us out of darkness and into his marvelous light. So, Father, I just pray that your Spirit would guide us each step of the way, where we would be reminded that you are our living hope, and that because of Jesus, we can put off the malice and we can put on the new and crave the pure spiritual milk. We pray this in Christ's name.